Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Welcome aboard to The Disciplined Investor Podcast. It's Andrew Horowitz, and you are listening to episode number 72 of this wonderful thing that we do here each and every week. We come together to talk about money and finance and just investments and how to make money, try to save money in terms of our portfolios. And it's been quite an interesting time this weekend. This is the Labor Day weekend, and we've had the opportunity to have a couple of major things happen. We had a very impressive Democratic convention. We've had quite a dud of a Republican convention, not so much of their doing from the beginning, because more so because of the weather. Mother Nature came down and stuck her foot into the situation, it seems, and really put a damper on the Republican National Convention. And I do wonder what that's going to actually bring in terms of long-term, the effects on the convention. Because if you really think about it, I mean, the whole Democratic convention, it seemed to really be building a tremendous amount of steam into the end. And then all of a sudden we saw this Friday afternoon shocker where McCain's party, the Republicans, announced a relatively unknown vice presidential candidate, and really had a lot of people scratching their heads saying, what is going on? Young, very talented, but yet very inexperienced. The same thing that they were really thrashing around. I mean, just really pummeling the Obama camp for when he was out there standing on his own before the Biden nomination. But I got to tell you, on top of that, we saw Gustav roll in into the New Orleans and Louisiana and the Gulf of Mexico. The oil rigs were in question. What was really interesting, I thought, was on Friday we saw the initial reaction to the market, even though we saw the day really progress and the storm really progress and grow, was that initially, oil was getting hurt, right? We saw oil really starting to really pick up some steam, and I think towards the middle of the day, it was up a few points. But by the end of the day, settled out at only about $115 a barrel, which, again, is still significantly lower than it has been. And without belaboring it, over the weekend, we saw a very interesting thing happen. This is how I call it. What happened was that the government, our government, came on and talked about how we shouldn't worry. If, in fact, Gustav comes in and actually just totally annihilates the whole area, all the oil rigs or a good part of them are really destroyed and production is really constrained and all sorts of problems from there, what happens now is going to be that you shouldn't worry. We shouldn't worry. We don't have to worry about $5, $6, $7 a gallon gasoline because there's plenty of supply. The week before, we saw the Petroleum Institute come out with their numbers, and it was very clear that there's obviously a real amazing build. I think they're saying that we're showing about a 5% reduction in consumption already, since we saw the real spike in the mid part of this year in just the United States. A 5% reduction in consumption equated to, I think, an 8 million barrel build of surplus. In addition to that, the governmental spokesman that I was watching over the weekend, I spent some time, but caught a glimpse of this, the corner of my eye on CNN, it was showing that they were saying, don't worry, we have plenty in the strategic oil reserves, we have plenty of supply available, and really spelled out at the situation. What they really did, in my opinion, was different. What they really did was show their hand. There was, if you want to look at it like a poker game, Gustav came in and bluffed, and the oil prices were seemingly going higher, and the other side, the opponent, showed their cards. And what happened is when Gustav didn't come in, bam, right? Bam. Oil came down immediately. It would actually crack below 109 per barrel midday on Monday, Labor Day, overseas. And the energy companies, we looked at London, and BP Amoco was down, BP was down, I guess it was down about 5.5%. You look in China, there was a few of their energy companies down about 4.5%. The worst performing sector in the markets on Labor Day, even though we were closed here, the other markets overseas, was energy. Because now what you have is a triple play, I guess, right? Number one, you have a supply build. Even though Iran is coming in right now and saying they don't want to have oil under $100. Okay, good for them. But and obviously there's going to be a, if you look at the chart of oil and the oil prices, it's going to hold at that level. It looks like from a just a straight technical analysis standpoint, obviously there's a good deal of support at that level. That's where we start out the year, as a matter of fact, at 100. Can you believe it went up so fast? But when you look at, you know, what's happened here, the triple play is you had, number one, you had oil come in and show the surplus last week. We had a clearly moving, a lowering down of a reduction of cost. And then on top of that, we don't have the build of the pricing, but we do have the oil companies, the rigs, et cetera, going offline for a period of time. That spells disaster for these oil companies. I don't mean to be, you know, kind of keeping on pounding the table when it comes to my recommendation of the inverse oil and gas ETF, which is DUG. Any of you that have, and many of you have written me, any of you that have played that and have invested in that have done very well. I also, though, at this time want to give you, and we're still holding it, by the way, I want to give you a quick update and just a disclaimer. What I talk about here is information for you to use and to further research, obviously. You know, don't take this or anything else as blind advice, just to go out and just blindly go and, you know, just plunk some money down. I got some emails over the weekend that we had recommended looking at natural gas as a potential. It was starting to, for a lot of reasons, level out, and the energy efficiency and the reduction of, or the increase in demand for clean burning fuels was really significant. And even though we saw supplies were building, it was, you know, it would look like it was going to start leveling off. But we put a stop in. We bought it on right before the announcement of the supply came out. We put a stop in and moved out of it. Now, a lot of people had written me that said that they saw that. They saw me actually have an investment in that when I recommended it on my blog. Well, obviously, you know, when you go to disciplinedinvestor.com, you listen to this podcast, when you go to the Strategy Lab or my writings on MSN or wherever it is, or whoever you listen to, whether it's Cramer, whether it's the gurus on CNBC, it doesn't matter, whoever it is, you need to do the research yourself. Because if you just blindly buy something, for example, we went down about 6.5% immediately after the supply came out. Well, we stopped out of it there. If you bought that, anybody bought that, I want you to be careful. I want you to make sure they have good downside protection. That's what we've been preaching for a long time. Right now, the market for anything, whether it's commodities or technology or currency, is very, very volatile. Be very, very careful. I think it's really important to make sure you have those downside stops put on your positions, or at least a price target. Which leads me to the next point I want to bring up to you. It's interesting because when I look at my portfolios right now on the Strategy Lab, for example, and we're using a strategy very similar to what we use, similar, a little bit different than we use in this one specific one that we call the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. And that one is, it's similar but not exact. So here's what happened. When I look back on that and I studied the last month, and we're down, I think, about 1.5%. On that, and it's about a little bit off from the markets, but we're really obviously playing a little bit more of a negative sentiment bet, a negative connotation on the portfolio, kind of looking at it from the aspect that things are not as good as I, you know, most people are making them out to be on the analysts, et cetera, that there's another shoe to drop here. Well, with that in mind, obviously the market moving up has hurt our short positions, or a few of our short positions. And the interesting thing there is that while I look at that and I'm trying to be very conservative in terms of the sell stops and our downside risk, what I do notice is that most of the losses right now are coming on two positions that actually were stopped out. And one of them came back slightly. They actually came back about $4 or $5, and the other one is actually still the same price. But the stop out is we'll see what happens, obviously, moving down. I think one of the things you need to do is loosen the stops a little bit right now if you're committed to a position. Because right now, when it comes to stops, the volatility is just going to, you know, totally take us out on many positions if we're holding maybe a 6 or 7% sell stop downside, maybe even 8. We may want to look at potentially maybe not even investing in something if we think the volatility is going to be there. But more importantly, maybe we want to look at maybe 9 or 10% downside risk if we're really committed and we believe this is going to work in our favor, whether it's a short or long position. I think that's kind of where I'm thinking right now, and I'll let you know that. Take a look at the information on the blog, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and I'll give you some direction what we're doing moving forward. With that in mind, I also want to mention that I'm going to write about this, but on the next podcast, we have a good guest coming on. We have Jason Calacanis actually scheduled. We also have a good friend of mine who is going to talk to us about trading, day trading. And if you're ever interested in that, we're also going to offer a free course. So stay tuned for that next couple of podcasts. But what I want to mention, one thing is, I'm going to talk about MasterCard. I've talked about Capital One a few times here. if you've been listening for a while, I've been a little bit of a lunatic on Capital One for the last number of months, and I still think we have problems there. It's a giant tumor on their balance sheet, as I see it, and all sorts of problems with cash flow. And what I'm going to do is I want to talk to you about MasterCard and some of my theory on this and what is going on with that. Also, why it is being continually it's holding up pretty well, even in the face of last week's we saw the consumer sentiment moderate a bit and not look as bad. But at the same time, we saw that spending was down considerably. I think this is going to hurt MasterCard, and I will bring you some of that in our next episode. That's going to be episode number 73. And but what I want to do right now, it's Labor Day. I thought what we do is bring in a good friend of mine, MSN Money. I've been developing a relationship with, and I really think it's great timing, just absolute great timing to start to reevaluate what are we doing in our portfolios to manage it. Not from the actual point of how are we looking at individual positions to buy or sell and look at the fundamentals or the technicals, but really what are we doing? You know, stepping back one point, how are we monitoring it? How are we looking at this? And one of the things that recently happened was that at MSN Money, there was an announcement that they're discontinuing one of their products and actually changing it to a different format, if you will. But I really like, even as a backup, MSN Money's site, their portfolio manager. I really, really like their screener and their research. And it's just incredible depth. Of educational material on there. So I thought I'd do is get my good friend Chris Jolly on the phone and talk with him about some of the things that are going on and kind of go through what's going on. I think it's a great time, back to school, kind of, fresh out there with kind of starting a new quarter very shortly. But what can we do maybe to take a different approach to our portfolios from an overall administrative and management approach and see what they have, my favorite site. So let's see what they have to offer, and we'll get him on the phone right when we get back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We'll be right back. Let me take a second and just mention to you a couple of things that I think are important. If you haven't done so, I really encourage you. It's really a great opportunity and time to head on over to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or go to your local Barnes & Noble and pick up a copy of my book, The Disciplined Investor. It gives you a lot of tools and techniques that you can look at and really, seeking out and finding what stocks, what mutual funds, how should I invest, what's a GIC, what's a guaranteed investment contract, and what's a PE ratio, a PEG ratio, how do I know how to use it, understanding balance sheets. If you ever want to learn about downside risk management, well, you got that over there at on the Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. So I would encourage you to take a look at that. And if you really don't like to read, well, you can buy it over at Audible and listen to it online if you can stand the sound of my voice for another 5 hours. And the other thing I want to mention to you is I've been talking about this a little bit lately and because I get so many emails, just so many. So if you've heard this before, just I apologize. But, we have that strategy, the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. And what I'm hearing from the people that have just a tremendous amount of people have shown interest, we have a private blog that just goes step by step about many of the positions that we're investing in, how we're investing, what we're doing. So you have this portfolio that's fully transparent. If you have a reservation in already, I would encourage you to get through the whole process at this point because, again, we're kind of reaching the capacity in stage one here. If you haven't done so already and you want to check out what this is all about, there's a $50,000 minimum. I brought it down from my traditional minimum. And what you're really getting is a strategy that's going to short, long, we're going to use all things that we talk about here with options and downside risk management. If you're just absolutely fed up with the buy and hold strategy that you have with your mutual fund and you don't really know what's going on, you have a hedge fund and it's kind of all wrapped up in this totally opaque and just you can't see what's going on. And if you want to learn what's going on, because we are having conversations on this private website where we really encourage conversations and comments, and I talk about why we're doing what we're doing, the successes and failures, and it's really a great opportunity, I think. It is aggressive investment. I want to make that very clear. But if you want to check it out, go over to the website, The Disciplined Investor. There's a little banner that you can go. You could go and actually listen to about a 14-minute virtual tour. I encourage you to do that. I think the end of September, we may look to kind of close this down and possibly, I shouldn't say close it down, but at least, close down, kind of the inflows, if you will, of money just temporarily to make sure we can handle the administration, et cetera. It's going along very smoothly now, but I just want to make sure everybody gets the same level of great service. And I got to tell you, it's something that you've never seen before. I can promise you that. So check that out, and I think you'll really enjoy that. On the phone now with me is a good friend of mine, and he is the director of MSN Money, the director of marketing for MSN Money, Chris Jelly. And Chris, how are you? What's going on?
Andrew, great to talk to you again. Thanks for having us on.
So last time we were talking, it was over a very large steak. What was the name of that restaurant?
Daniel's Broiler in Bellevue, Washington.
Yummy, yes, yummy.
They certainly do have a wide selection of fairly large steaks.
Yeah, that was truly a great steak. Great company as well. So when I was in Redmond and kind of tongue in cheek talk about the cafeteria, but it was a cool experience. I was there with Chris Oster and we had a great time. But some good interesting conversations right about the time when I was there. There was this. I guess the announcement about what you call, and maybe you can explain it, the box product, the MSN Money box product. There was, I think, a change from what was going to be the usual annual renewal of MSN Money 07 and 08 and 09, and it kind of changed what's happening. So you want to kind of give us a little bit of insight into that?
Yeah, sure. The changes that we've made are related to the Microsoft Money Plus product line, and in the past that has been called Microsoft Money 2008, 2007, 2006, et cetera, et cetera. And this past year we've renamed that whole product line. We have three different products. We have a deluxe, a premium, and a home and business, three different SKUs as part of that family. And for 17 years, we have been updating that product annually. And it just kind of got to the point where the releases and the new features became much more incremental, much more evolutionary than revolutionary, which of course is sometimes very, very good. But just for a particular function like managing your personal finances, after this long, we think annual releases were just a little bit too much. And in fact, we had heard that not only from consumers, but from a lot of our partners who actually wanted a little bit more time between releases so we could work with them on more innovative deals and more flexibility with our promotional efforts.
Interesting because I had this big rant on, the week before, this huge rant on the auto industry and how I think that they need to redo a lot of things, obviously. But one of the big things was that this fascination, and I'll go so far as almost saying a fetish, with the annual release of a new car. You know, they kind of come out with a new car every single year, and you got to say, wait a second, it used to be a kind of an October, November, now they pushed it back to August. And I think that it's a great point. I think, you know, what's the point if you're not really having a new product, aside from the fact that you need revenue, any company out there, but if you don't have a new product with a substantial change to it, the current day updates where you can just go online and get updates, what's the real point of it?
Well, I think you're onto something there, Andrew. I think the internet and the advent of broadband has certainly opened up a lot of different ways to actually distribute and go to market with a particular product. In fact, part of the change that we've made is we are actually completely out of the packaged product business for the Microsoft Money product line. So instead of walking to the retail store and seeing it on the store shelves, we've actually gone to a 100% digital distribution strategy. So less physical inventory, but more instant gratification for consumers, better for the environment. There's more flexibility in terms of the different things that we can do. And it also allows us to do very much what you alluded to, and that is when new features are available or when we are done building a particular area of the product. So take, for example, let's say we expanded our credit area and help people manage their credit more effectively and build some additional tools and resources in that area. Instead of having an artificial date, you know, a stop date that we had to just stop developing just to get out to market, because of these changes in the way we're distributing the product and the way people are using it, we can actually go ahead and build a more complete solution, and I think that that is a very, very good thing for everybody.
Well, I think also, I mean, that I can obviously ask the question of what took you so long in this regard, but it must have been, I mean, I guess there was some kind of security issues, or maybe you were used to putting this whole thing out. So, but do you, as Microsoft, actually do the distribution, or do you hire a company like a Digital River or somebody to help along with that? How's that work?
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head. We partner with Digital River, mm-hmm. who handles the download capabilities for us, and we're also working with and talks with other big retail partners as well. Mm-hmm. So while we won't be on the physical shelves of retailers, we are certainly having those discussions about the virtual store shelves, if you will.
I think it's interesting because, you know, I have this book out and I've always wanted to get in the bookstores with it. It's finally in all the bookstores, and I'm thinking to myself, is that really beneficial anymore? And is that model really, you know, beneficial? Whereas you can have millions of people searching online for something, there's certain capacity and certain geographical restrictions, I guess, for someone who's actually going to a store, right? You know, it's kind of, mm-hmm. I really question that model. I don't think, you know, there's still that I want to look at it, I want to feel it, I want to kind of understand it, I want to open it up, I want to maybe test it, et cetera. But, you know, mm-hmm. I question that. I want to ask you another question about the Money product, because this is something about, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago plus, okay? There was this huge push towards aggregation, as I think they called it, right?
Uh-huh.
Whereas
yep.
you want to kind of have your credit cards and your financial statements and all this at least viewable in one place, because why not? It was so cool. And I found, you know, I asked a lot of people, I mean, what do you think about this? And I think conceptually everybody's like, that's great. But,
right.
But I mean, it really is great. But when they get to the point of inserting their first credit card, okay, second, third, passcodes, all of a sudden they have to put in their passcodes and their private information for their banking, I think they start getting kind of a little bit more reluctant. I don't know if what your findings are, but how do you get beyond that? People, I think, are very concerned. As a matter of fact, I was with Leo Laporte a few weeks back, and we were talking about this, and he says, you know what, I love this idea, but I just can't bring myself to actually putting my password in for my bank account. And you know, and I understand that, you know, and people mm-hmm. are all concerned about, well, online's not safe. And I always say, listen, you're going to go to a restaurant, and forgive me anybody that works in the restaurant business, but you're going to hand your credit card to some unknown person that goes away for 5 minutes and disappears with your credit card and then comes back, and you don't even flinch. But putting your money and your credit card in an unprotected, quote-unquote unprotected, internet site, which may actually have significant encryption and be, you know, signed by and VeriSign base, all this good stuff, but you won't do that. I mean, so how do you bring people past that point?
Well, I think the first part is education, and very much like you just said, that is an analogy I've used many, many times, because I certainly believe that that it's very true. It's typically much safer to you know, put your credit card with a trusted source online than it is necessarily handing it to some person that you don't even know. So the second note on that is that I think that's also where you need to make sure that the companies that you are working with are truly committed, and I mean truly committed, to providing top-notch security across the board. And I think you've heard Microsoft from Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer all the way down the organization talk and preach about how important security is to Microsoft, because it really is the cornerstone of how we are going to make people feel more comfortable and kind of get over that first hurdle. Because if they don't get over that first hurdle, they're not going to get all the benefits of seeing all their accounts in one place, which is really a convenient thing when you mm-hmm. when you bring them all together right. and see right. it work.
So what's next on the horizon? I mean, I've been working and talking with everybody about, you know, the portfolio and the screens. As a matter of fact, this week, I don't know if you saw it yet, but this week, the Strategy Lab, and right, you can get to it right at the front page of MSN Money. There's a link that says how to find, you know, losing stocks or whatever it's called. And it takes you right to my article talking about how to use the screener to set up a screen to find stocks that really could be, you know, kind of coming down due to analyst downgrades and due to breaking certain support levels, et cetera. But, you know, so you have this wonderful product, the screener. You have the portfolio manager. You have a bunch of tools that are just great. You have great writers and all that. How are you going to improve moving forward? Because I think that one of the biggest challenges that you have when, you know, you have a Yahoo and a Google and all these guys kind of, you know, kind of constantly breathing down each other's throats, you got to be very, you got to differentiate yourself. You have to have something really special to keep people and keep them sticky. So I guess a loaded question or you know, what can you do to improve? But what do you think the biggest problems that you need to really be, maybe from a marketing guy, you don't want to talk about this, but, you know, what do you see the biggest things that you need to kind of improve?
Well, I think, you know, Andrew, when you talk about the finance category in particular, so, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about the move out of the retail shelves,
mm-hmm.
and I think, you know, a lot of that is going to be, and how people shop, I really think a lot of it's going to be driven by the individual category. So, as a whole, I don't see, you know, Microsoft, we don't see the overall packaged software business going away anytime soon, but particularly within finance, people are much more likely to shop and use products and services online than they are in some of the other ones. And mm-hmm. I think you mentioned that tangible aspect of it.
Right.
With personal finance, there's not that tangible, you know, you got to hold it, you got to see it, you got to feel it. It just doesn't exist when right. you're paying your bills.
Right. No, I hear you. I don't want to hold or see my bills anyway. So there you go.
That's right. So it is truly one of those areas that is uniquely suited to this new world and the new medium that we have. And so when you look ahead, I think that more and more automation is going to continue to happen. And I think that people, you know, most people don't like to necessarily enter data, but they like to have the data
right.
about what they're spending, what investments they're evaluating, what investments they have, what investments they've sold,
right.
what are their tax implications. So people, I think, are going to continue to want and need that information, but I think their willingness to spend time getting it, I think that the patience and the amount of time that they're actually willing to spend is going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think that means for software companies is that we need to do a better job on the automation front and making it even easier today than it is today to give people the information that they need literally at the click of a button.
Mm-hmm.
And we've made a lot of progress over 17 years. You know, when we started this product, the Microsoft Money product, it was really a glorified electronic checkbook
mm-hmm.
where you manually input your information and you had a really cool-looking checkbook register,
right.
but it was all manual. We've made a ton of progress since then with our OFX efforts and some of the other aggregation efforts that we've had, but I think we can do a lot more, and I'm talking about the industry holistically.
Well, I mean, the fact is, I mean, your biggest competition is what? Is Intuit and Quicken. I mean, I don't think there's much competition other than that out there. There's a couple of little guys out there, which, you know, if you haven't bought yet, I'm sure you guys will end up buying. But nonetheless, you know, it's interesting that I think that you've gone and we went, well, generally speaking, we've gone from a, you know, an online-only way back when to kind of, you know, PC-based products. And then, you know, this evolution back to the cloud, if you will. And I think mm-hmm. that what's interesting about, and listen, my biggest criticism about Microsoft's site sometimes is that it's not entirely logical. It doesn't fit together all the time. You know, you go and you want to find one thing, and it may not have all the links. You know, we've talked about this, right? You know, it doesn't have
mm-hmm.
all
yeah,
the links.
Sure.
You know, and I write for Top Stocks, and unless you know that you're, and it's not listed on the front page of MSN or MSN Money, you know, you may not be able to find something like that, and it doesn't relate back. And this is something that I think, you know, I'm just telling you, I mean, you know this, and we've talked about this, that listeners who haven't checked out the Microsoft site need to kind of just stop for a second. If you haven't liked it, or if you do like it and you love it, whatever, you need to stop for a second and kind of go and look at it in a different way and kind of peek around the corner a little bit, I think, to see what else is out there, because it's not so evident. As a matter of fact, when we were in San Francisco, and I was speaking at the Money Show, and Ron Pritchard was talking, and he started talking about the Strategy Lab, I think one of the first things out of his mouth, he said that, you know, if you haven't seen the Strategy Lab, it's because we do a great job at hiding it, you know? And I think that, you know, the truth is, while you can see it readily, the Strategy Lab, I think one of the things people haven't really, I think, and I'm speaking in general, but it would be behoove the listeners, if you go and you check out just how unbelievably robust the portfolio manager is, and unbelievably robust how the consolidation product is that you're talking about, MSN Money, and how you can actually kind of track everything. And at the end of the year, instead of having a shoebox or even a pile of paper, you know, 10 inches thick to go to your accountant, it's readily available kind of at the click of a button, right?
That's right. And I think, you know, that is one of the challenges that we have as a team here. And that is, we have such a deep website in MSN Money, and it's both, it has the breadth and it has the depth, because personal finance is a pretty broad area. And yep. When you talk about everything from investing to taxes, to paying your bills, to credit, loans, insurance, those are pretty big areas. And I think that they're all areas that people are looking for additional insight on. They're looking for additional tools. They're looking for ways to improve their overall situation in each one of those areas. And so as a team, one of the big challenges is, how do you create really compelling, personally relevant, so it's useful to that individual consumer? How do you do that in a way that's really simple and easy for them to get to what they want?
Yeah, that's a problem. I mean, I can't even imagine, because of the, you know, it's one thing if you're just dealing with one piece of that product, but anyway, I mean, we can go on to this. The fact of the matter is, I would encourage everybody, especially the final quarter of the year, where you're kind of back to school and you're back to kind of maybe digging in to figure out what you can do to improve your finances and all that. If you want to know about mortgages and you want to know about things like you know, how to best either buy or lease a car, or get some advice from, I think he's the number one most read personal finance columnist, is Jim Juback. And I think he got the number one and two people over there. And you know, I think that probably, as you said, the depth is just, and the breadth is amazing, and people should do themselves a favor and give themselves a present, actually, and check it out online. So this new product, this MSN downloadable product, MSN Money, what are you calling it?
Microsoft Money Plus.
Money Plus. Mm-hmm. There's no like date after it now? There's no like 08?
That's right.
Okay. That's big. So, is there a trial? How's that work?
Yeah, actually, there is a trial version of the various products there, and so you can try it out for free for 60 days, and then if you like what you're using, you can obviously upgrade and maintain the file that you've been using, right. Or you can buy it. The price is very, very competitive, so if you just want to get going right away, you can do that as well.
So if somebody gets this and they are using Quicken or something like this, I don't know how this actually works, and so mm-hmm. Can you actually import all the things? Is it an easy import process from other products?
Yeah, in fact, that's an area that we have focused on, because back to your point about getting people over that first hurdle, some of it's the security hurdle, some of it's the I don't want to spend a lot of time entering information hurdle. Mm-hmm. So we have built a Quicken importer that will take existing Quicken files and bring those right into the existing product, so you can maintain any of the historical transaction detail that you may have been using in Quicken over the years, and use them with the money product. You can also bring, of course, the older money files up to the existing version as well.
I would think that'd be kind of interesting, being on a software team and working on the import feature, but realizing that the competition is doing the same thing, and, you know, how do you kind of do it in a way that's, you know, polite and nice, but at the same time, you know, I don't know. I guess you want to make sure that people stay with your product, so not that you can do anything weird with it, but that would be a fun little process, I bet.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of nuances, too, just when you talk about, in fact, this is one area that Intuit and Microsoft have actually formed a partnership. We both were founding members of the OFX Consortium, along with CheckFree, and CheckFree is now part of Fiserv, I believe. Mm-hmm. But OFX is a way to transmit financial information back and forth, and mm-hmm. so it's what allows you to bring in your account balances into the money or Quicken product. So our objectives are very much aligned in that regard, because we do believe collectively, I think, that automation is super, super important.
So, Chris, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting, you know, we talk about this product, but what about, like, as we talk about the initiatives, you know, MSN Money and kind of where you're going with, I don't know, the big talk these days is all about video and what's happening in that realm?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are making significant investments in our multimedia efforts moving forward. And we're not just talking about the traditional or if you can call it old school internet video.
Yeah, right. Stuff from like a year ago. Yeah, oh my God.
Exactly. So old school from a year ago. But
right.
We are working on much more interactive ways where we can bring those experiences together, leveraging the experts that we have, like Jim Juback, who has just a fabulous track record over 10 years, very transparent. You can see his picks, you can see how he's done, which I think is a very important piece of that. But bringing all of that together, so bringing the editorial content coupled with the tools, coupled with the multimedia interactivity, and then you put some blog functionality in there, and I think you have a pretty compelling value proposition across the board.
Well, because what it does is it closes the loop, right? It closes the loop from here's the news at you to the news, and what do you think, and let's talk about it. It kind of brings the conversation together, which obviously is a very difficult thing to do with the millions of people that look at the things that are on there. I have like 5 videos up from the Money Show. They're kind of, I don't know why they catch you in those weird poses for the poster frame. I mean, you know, they got me in this kind of like these poses with my eyes and just I look distorted. But anyway, you know, it's probably kind of cool because they have that. The Strategy Lab, by the way, is a pretty cool functionality. It's kind of it's interesting because, you know, what you get is a cross-section of investment ideas as well as, I'm not allowed to really put a investment idea or buy or sell or transaction in without justification and a commentary behind it. So I think that's kind of
right.
Cool.
Yeah, that's and Strategy Lab, I think, is a fantastic tool for people to go check out different strategies and really get a better understanding of how a particular strategy actually impacts the overall portfolio performance, and actually get some really good insight from some top-notch professionals.
Yeah, no, it's great. I'm doing pretty poorly in terms of, well, I mean, I'm not doing poorly. We're down about 1.25%. Market's up like 2 because we're, you know, relatively on the short side, but that could change in one day, and I think that will, actually. But nonetheless, yeah. It's pretty cool to look at the various, I think, positions and rationales. I mean, there's a real good group there, and actually, I'm going to be, maybe it's a good time to announce, I'll be in Washington, D.C. with the Strategy Lab in early November, so if anybody wants to get together and say hello, that can be done, so... but no, I think that would be a really great thing if I could envision this kind of video that comes together with, you know, Juback who puts out videos constantly, and then his commentary. It hits all the senses, right? The people that like to listen, people that like to read, people that like to see what's going on. I think that's a very smart thing to do.
Yeah, well, it definitely hits all the senses, and again, the transparency, I think, is such a key part of our overall strategy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that there's some secret sauce. It is really about helping people learn about how to invest,
right,
or how to make better investments. If they're already well-seasoned investors, I think they can certainly still learn something from the Strategy Lab and people like you and Juback and the others that participate on the site. I think it's just a great resource for people no matter where you are.
Man, you got to love John Markman's stuff. It's just is great. My new best friend.
Markman's brilliant.
He's great. He's great. I love him. I mean, the last couple of articles about oil down at 65 and basically the end of the world, and his one after that, and some other commentary recently that has me, you know, thinking about some of the things that are going on. But he really hits home with the how-tos, you know, and kind of brings together all the different components of really, you know, putting a real piece. And that's what's nice, by the way. You got all these different people that cover different areas, and I think that, you know, you space it out well. I don't mean to keep on, you know, kind of, you know, kissing your rump. But, you know, I think that the fact is that, you know, the offering is pretty neat. And I look forward to the continuing enhancements. And hey, I want to thank you also for continuing to work with me and our things, and our experience with Microsoft has been really top notch, very professional, very impressive.
Yeah, I hear your podcast is doing quite well.
Ah, so far so good. Knock wood. I think that it's been good. It's been great. It's been so far. We're hitting back to the senses. A lot of videos out there, but we're hitting that kind of audio. People want to hear what's going on. It's very portable, and we're real pleased with that. Real pleased. Yeah. So we'll talk about that soon. Hey, Chris Jolly, the director of marketing for MSN Money. Thank you so much coming to us from the mothership of Redmond, and I look forward to having a steak with you again soon.
Andrew, thanks very much. Appreciate your time.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
All righty.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for a little bit of an abbreviated session here on the Labor Day week. We have a short week on the trading. I think when you're probably listening to this, we're head deep into a real questionable time about oils we talked about. Next week, we're going to talk with, I believe, Jason Calacanis. We have him lined up at least. We're going to talk with Fausto Puglisi from Cyber Trading University coming up. And I got a lot more in store for the beginning of the year. Hey, pay attention, by the way. Hey, help me out with something. I just thought of this. The podcast awards are coming up. I'm going to give you more information very shortly. Hit the website next few weeks, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, the Strategy Lab at MSN Money. Check out my portfolio there. But I'll give you some more information when this comes around. And I'll make sure that we all know about this. And I'd really like your help on this. I think I have a lot of fun doing this, and I hope you have a good time and your profitable listening experience. But for right now, that's all we're going to do for this episode number 72 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We'll speak soon, and make sure to bring your comments. Love to hear what you have to say. Love to hear your ideas on what you want to hear. Head on over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Leave some comments, leave your information in terms of your desires on what we can cover. And we're looking for a profitable end of quarter. I think we're lined up pretty well here with our portfolios. I hope you are too. I'll see you soon. This is Andrew Horowitz signing off. See you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.